Omar Khadr was sent to Guantanamo Bay in 2002 when he was captured in Afghanistan by U.S. forces when he was only 15 years old. He has been in Guantanamo Bay ever since and is the only remaining Western citizen in Guantanamo Bay and the youngest prisoner there. On January 29th, the Supreme Court of Canada released a judgment that Omar Khadr's human rights are being violated in Guantanamo Bay and that Canada was an active participant in this abuse. Though the judgment did not suggest a specific remedy and thus did not declare that the Canadian government should repatriate Omar Khadr back to Canada. Joining me on the line to speak about the case of Omar Khadr and the recent judgment is Ihsan Gardi, the Executive Director of the Canadian Council on American Relations. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show, Ihsan.
Walaikum salam. Thanks for having me on, Ome.
Okay, so we wanted to start off by asking you what circumstances or what was the situation that brought Omar Khadr to Guantanamo Bay and that is keeping him there? And also, if you could just talk about how he's the youngest prisoner to ever go there and what does that mean?
Well, you covered a lot of it in your introduction, Ome. As you said, Omar Khadr is, or as some of your listeners may or may not know, he's the fifth child of seven children in the Khadr family, and he was captured by American forces following a firefight in exchange, and then since then he was transferred to Guantanamo Bay, the Guantanamo Bay detention camps, where he has remained ever since. So, as you said, over 7 years now. Going on after that, there's been a series of attempts to have him repatriated in terms of legal motions put forward by his defense team here in Canada, as well as the defense in the U.S. has been doing its best to try and advocate on behalf of his case. As you said, he's currently the only remaining Western citizen being held at Guantanamo after governments from all other nations have used diplomatic pressure and made requests to successfully push for the return of their jailed citizen. Just recently as well, I don't know if your listeners are aware, but on Monday this past week, there was a story in the National Post that stated that U.S. officials are looking for a way to quietly to repatriate the Canadian-born Omar Khadr back to Canada. But, you know, obviously it will take some effort on behalf of the Canadian government to make that initial request.
And it's shocking, and maybe not so shocking, that Canada is not insisting on repatriating Omar back to Canada. He was born here. This is his home. His family is here. What is kind of behind that? I mean, it's obvious that it's racist, but what other, ideological underpinnings are beneath that? I mean, we're seeing increasingly that Muslim men are being targeted in this country more and more. And how does this kind of fit into that trend?
Right. Well, you know, Omar Khadr's case is, you know, has some peculiarities of its own. As you mentioned, he was part of the, and as I mentioned as well, he was part of the Khadr family as well. And unfortunately, there have been some media appearances that have made this family as a whole quite unpopular. And for some of the things that they've said, which, to be honest, have been not very helpful have hurt the public perception of Omar Khadr and his case. However, it's been Khair Khan's position, as well as that of several other social justice organizations, including Amnesty, UNICEF, and others, that, you know, the popularity of a person should not be the litmus test to determine whether or not somebody is accorded their rights. You know, it's not a popularity case. Somebody is either accorded their rights or they're not. You know, this is almost impossible to imagine happening 25, 30 years old, that Canada would not stand up for a citizen who, under international law, is, you know, recognized as somebody who would be a child soldier. He was 15 at the time he was captured. You know, Canada has sort of prejudged from the beginning Mr. Khadr without allowing the trial process to proceed, basically saying that he's been accused of serious crimes. you know, and the question, it begs the question, you know, since when does the seriousness of the indictment against a person mean that that defendant has fewer rights? When Canada looks at murderers and break and enter criminals, they have equal rights, so it's just not logically correct to say that one has fewer rights than another. CSIS was involved in this, and Canada sent CSIS investigators to Guantanamo, which has been internationally recognized as a place that exists beyond the rule of law, an illegal institution where he was interrogated, and they interrogated him knowing that he'd been subject to sleep deprivation. A sleep deprivation program, which they term the frequent flyer program, where the subjects are woken up every few hours in order to make them more compliant to questioning. Rationalizing it that it was okay because it was in the service of security, or perhaps to help our ally. And then, as you said, we have this Supreme Court ruling recently, in which the government argued that the courts, don't have any say over what Canada's executive does abroad, even if it does it to Canadian citizens, is what the government argued, that it was immune from judicial scrutiny, which this, of course, translates into the fact that, you know, it's immune from having Canadian citizens seek the intervention of the courts. In any case, The government went on to argue that even if you do have something to say, the fact is that his rights weren't violated, and if they were, then we have already repaired that violation by handing over transcripts of that interrogation. Well, since when does handing over transcripts of somebody who's been tortured remedy the torture? It makes no sense. So the Supreme Court ruling came back quite clearly, 9-0. Basically saying, you're wrong, Canada. Omar Khadr's rights were violated. You were the one that violated Canada. Thirdly, the violation is ongoing. And fourthly, there must be reparation for that violation. And it has to take into account two things. One, that the violation hurt his chances of defending himself. And it resulted in continuing detention under illegal circumstances.
And this recent judgment is part of a kind of a back and forth that's been happening for a few years, right? Supporters have been trying to get the Canadian government to do something, and they've actively trying to not do something. This is not like it was the first case. It's gone through many different levels because the government keeps pushing back.
Correct. It does bear the hallmark, and there are echoes of other cases like this of Canadians having difficulty obtaining assistance from their government when they are in trouble abroad. Whether we look at the case of Abu Sufyan Abdulrazak, who, as you know, was stuck in Sudan for 6 years, or you look at the cases of the government involvement in the cases of the Maher Arar or Abdullah Al Malki, Ahmed Al Mati, Moayed Nuruddin, the three other men in addition to Maher Arar who were tortured overseas. So it does bear many sort of eerie similarities to those cases in that it seems to suggest the government reluctance to assist its citizens and in protecting their rights while abroad.
And the recent judgment did mention that the Canadian government needs to do something, but did not specifically say what, right? Omar Khadr's supporters were hoping that the judgment would come back and say that the government needs to repatriate Khadr right away. So then if the government needs to do something, what do you think that they're thinking that they'll do in order to comply with this judgment?
Well, what the government has now come out and done is just a few weeks ago that they said that, what we'll do is we'll send a diplomatic note to Washington to basically ask the U.S., please kindly don't use the results of our interrogation in your case against Omar Khadr. Well, I think the Globe and Mail editorial on the government's response sort of characterized this quite well. They said this was a right move, not the right move. Mm-hmm. So this is a very small step in the right direction that the government took, but it's still, as you said, it does not provide what is termed as a meaningful remedy to actually address the ongoing human rights violations.
And Ahsan, in terms of the American government's or President Obama's election promise to close down Guantanamo Bay for good, where is that standing, and if is there still a possibility for that, and if so, how? What are the implications for Omar in that?
Well, I mean, you know, President Obama made a lot of promises during his election campaign, as a lot of politicians do. Now, obviously, once he's in office, I'm sure the reality of the situation on the ground in terms of the politics involved and the implications of making promises come fully to bear. And so there seems to be somewhat of a backpedaling on that promise. I think what was realized is probably a lot easier to, in theory, to look at closing it than when it came down to the reality of, well, what do we do once we close it? You know, the fact remains here that the Supreme Court of Canada has, even though they've made a decision which does not specifically require the government to repatriate Omar Khadr, they have maintained that, you know, in the event that the government does not provide a remedy for the serious violations of the constitutional right, that, as I say, the court in quote says, in the case of a refusal by the government to abide by constitutional constraints, courts are empowered to make orders ensuring that the government's foreign affairs prerogative is exercised in accordance with the Constitution, unquote. And that's from the court's decision. So basically telling the government that, you know, if a remedy that does not address the ongoing violations is not made, that there is still room for the court to come back to this case.
And I'm wondering if you could tell us what kind of strategies are being thought about now to bring Omar Khadr home. So maybe CARE or any other kind of organizers that are organizing in solidarity with Omar Khadr. What's the next move?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Omay. You know, if your listeners want to have more information about this case as well as any other case, I recommend they check out CARE CAN's website, which is just carecan.ca, that's CAIRCAN.ca, or they visit the websites of the other social justice, prominent social justice organizations working on this case, for example, like Amnesty International Canada, which is just amnesty.ca. There's another website, the Omar Khadr Project, it's just omarkhadrproject.com, all one word. You know, in terms of sort of more proactive steps going forward, at this point, I can let you know that I did speak with one of Omar Khadr's counsel today to get an update on sort of where they stand. What happened was, with regards to this diplomatic note that was sent, the government did not even consult with the lawyers to let them know that they were going to be taking this step. So basically they just went ahead without consulting the lawyers, and at this point, you know, the lawyers for Mr. Khadr here in Canada, Nathan Whitling, and his partner-in-law, Dennis Edney, are looking to perhaps even have that decision quashed, which might be counterintuitive, but their reasoning being that more should have been done, that, you know, this remedy does not address the ongoing violation, and as such is not really a remedy. At the end of the day, what listeners can do is that obviously they can still write to the Prime Minister, to Prime Minister Stephen Harper, to their MP, to say that, you know, the Supreme Court of Canada has unanimously declared that his human rights have been violated under Section 7 of the Charter, and that, you know, it's clear that continued inaction by the Canadian government is simply not an option. He's endured now over 7 years of unlawful detention and harsh treatment in Guantanamo Bay. Now he's facing a military commission and a trial by a military commission, which, in spite of some of the reforms that it's undergone, still falls far short of international human rights standards. And as such, repatriation is, at this point, remains the only effective remedy. You know, if he is brought back to Canada, then if there are charges against him, then he should be able to face those here in a fair and transparent judicial process. And after that, there should be accommodation made for rehabilitation and reintegration into Canadian society for the sake of equality and justice for everyone, without exception.
Aysan, we are out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us today. And before we go, is there any last words that you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, again, I would encourage listeners that even though it seems like, you know, the government is not listening, this is still a democracy that we're living in, and I would encourage them to write to the Prime Minister, which is just pm@pm.gc.ca. Look up their local member of parliament, write to their member of parliament, express their desire to have Omar Khadr come repatriate back to Canada, where if there are charges against him, he can face these here and then be allowed to have rehabilitation and reintegration.
Aysan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Omay.
Kodafis.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was Aysan Ghardi, the Executive Director of the Canadian Council on American-Islamic Relations, and he was speaking to us today about the case of Omar Khadr, who is a Canadian citizen being held a prisoner in Guantanamo Bay. He was captured in 2002 when he was only 15 years old.